You're listening to North Shore Community Radio, broadcasting at 90.7 FM WTIP Grand Marais, 90.1 FM WGPO Grand Portage, 89.1 FM WKEK Gunflint Lake, and on the web at WTIP.org. This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene. Today we're talking with author David Housewright. Welcome to Superior Reads, David.
Thank you.
David Housewright is a former president of the Private Eye Writers of America. He won a prestigious Edgar Award from the Mystery Writers of America and three Minnesota Book Awards for his Rushmore, Mackenzie, and Holland Taylor Private Eye novels, as well as other tales of murder and mayhem in the Midwest. Your first book came out when you were 40, right, David?
Yes.
When did you first know that you wanted to be a writer?
When I was about 10.
Oh, how did that happen? What did you write?
I invented self-publishing when I was 10.
Oh, that's awesome. You were way before your time.
Yes, I was. My parents bought me, for a Christmas gift, they gave me a printing press. A hand-cranked printing press, and it was one of those presses where you would stamp the letters for the words out in tape.
Wow!
And you would put the words on the drum of the press, and you'd get up and you would run sheets of paper through. And I wrote a book, my very first novel, called Swinging Danger.
Oh, you always had an edge, huh?
And it was about a youngster who built a rope swing, what we used to call a Tarzan swing.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though everybody told him he was going to fall and break his neck, and he did fall, and he broke his wrist.
Oh.
And like all first novels, it was highly autobiographical.
Oh, no. Did that actually happen before or after you wrote it?
Yeah, before.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think that would have messed me up a little bit. I would have printed a book about discovering a suitcase full of cash or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds like a printing press that you might use to, like, become a mini detective yourself. Like, you might print a ransom note on it or something like that.
I'd probably get it backwards.
Yeah. Well, you were a journalist, and then you owned your own ad agency.
Yes.
Ever wish you could go back and do anything different about your path?
There are a lot of little things I wish I could take back. There are things I've said and done, and I suppose most people have those regrets, things you say. And
if you live long enough, right?
Yeah, you wish you hadn't, and things of that nature. But no, nothing else, because every decision I made, for good or ill, led me to where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And where I am today is a pretty nice place to be. I mean, I could jump up and say I would not have gone to Grand Forks, North Dakota, to work for the Herald.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I would have gone to Green Bay to work for the Gazette. I had that choice.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like a sci-fi novel. You make that choice, then what happens?
Right.
You know, do I end up getting back to where I am now, or do I end up doing something else? So it's, you know, I don't really think of it in those terms. I always think that it, you know, every step took me to here, and to here is where I want to be. So it's all good.
Yeah. So your first book was published when you were 40, and that book won the Edgar Award, correct?
Yes, it did.
And which one was that?
That was Penance.
Penance. And who was the publisher on Penance?
Penance was published by Foul Play Press, which was a imprint of a bigger company called Countryman Press on the East Coast. I think they were in Vermont.
Okay. This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, and we're talking to David Housewright, author of Like to Die. Well, you're quite prolific, David. You've had 19 novels since 1996. Do you ever
actually 21, if you're keeping track.
21, wow.
Yes, Like to Die is number 21.
That's awesome. Do you ever have writer's block?
I do now. I didn't for the first 21 books.
Okay.
No, I use outlines.
Okay.
I like to work things out ahead of time.
So you know where you're going to end up when you start chapter one.
I always know how it ends before I begin.
Okay.
And so I tend to have things worked out, but I take my own sweet time doing it. I would write a book a year.
Okay.
But now for the last couple of years, I've been writing two books a year, the Holland Taylors and the McKenzie novels.
Okay.
And I don't have the leisure that I used to have. I can't just sit back and figure it out as I go and you know, just take my time. Now I know I'm on a clock.
And you're on a contract, right?
Sure.
And is it the same publisher for both?
Yes, St. Martin's Press out of New York for both. They're mm-hmm. a division mm-hmm. of Macmillan. Well, anyway, so I find that's a little more daunting. Because I'm in my office now, and I'm staring at my screen, and I'm going, okay, now where do I go from here? Before, I would just, you know, figure it all out and not rush. And now I feel I have to rush. So
sure.
it takes a little more effort than it used to.
Yeah, you brought
up. Which is the reason you guys should all feel sorry for me.
You know,
I have that terrible commute in the morning where I go from my kitchen and I carry my coffee to my office in the basement. You know what? Sometimes it's snowing.
That is rough.
it's a tough life.
That's a very tough life. Well, you brought up the Holland Taylor series. We mentioned that it won the Edgar Award in 1996 for the first in the series, Penance. There are four books in that series, with the most recent being Darkness, Sing Me a Song, which was published in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that series and the private investigator protagonist in that series?
Well, Holland Taylor is a traditional trench coat detective.
Ah.
He's very much in the same vein as Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe and Lou Archer and all those great detectives of you might call it the golden age. And he was an ex-cop and like most private investigators, and he was morally ambiguous, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
But we mentioned the publisher before. Countryman Press was bought by W.W. Norton. And W.W. Norton bought Countrymen for their cookbooks and hiking books and a lot of other things. But they didn't buy them for me.
Uh-oh.
So they literally didn't even know who I was. A publicist called my house once. My wife answered the phone, and the publicist asked to speak to Steve Housewright. Well, Steve is my cousin. I have a cousin named Steve, and Renee is like, well, you know, we're not going to give out the phone number. So she says, well, you know, ask who's calling. And the woman identified herself as being from W.W. Norton. And Renee asked her, are you sure you don't mean David Housewright, the award-winning author? And the publicist said, no, I'm pretty sure his name is Steve.
Oh, no.
So that's pretty much, you know, closed that door.
Yeah.
And we shopped around the series, and there were people interested, other publishers, but they couldn't control back sales, the three books that came out originally.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, that went away. And it's been a little while, and came up with the McKenzie series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over time, all the rights to those books reverted back to me, to the Holland Taylor novels.
Okay.
And a guy named Otto Penzler out of New York. He's this iconic mystery guy. If anybody dies, he's the guy that CNN interviews.
Okay.
So he talked me into bringing the Taylor books out in e-books. And I did, and they did very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, well, why don't we try to revive the character, or at least write another one and see, you know, see what kind of audience we have. So I wrote Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Sing Me a Song, and I didn't make a secret of it. I mean, I told people ask what you're doing, I tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And my publishing house heard about it, such as the gossip in my business.
Yeah.
And a guy calls me, my editor, and he says, I hear you're writing another Taylor novel. And I go, yeah. And he says, you got to show it to me first, right? I'm not under no contractual obligation to do that. But I said, well, sure, but are you guys interested in publishing two books a year? And he said, are you going to write two books a year? And I said, that's the plan. Mm-hmm. And he said, send me the book. And they liked it, and they offered a two-book contract to see what kind of response we got. And the second one, called First Kill the Lawyers, will come out in January.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, that's
so for
exciting.
The last couple of years, I've been coming out in January and June.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good pattern. I mean, but it sounds like a lot of pressure, two books a year.
I didn't think it would be.
Yeah, but now you're committed, David.
Now I'm thinking, oh, man, because I'm all, you know, you're a writer. You're thinking about the books all the time.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, it's like a program, you know, computer program running in the back of your head all the time. I go to dinners, I'll go to movies, I'll go to jazz concerts, I'll do whatever I'm doing, and in the back of my head, though, I'm always thinking of the book.
Yeah, I would guess.
I'll see somebody, I'll meet somebody, whatever. So it's always there anyway. But now it's just a little more demanding than it used to be.
Yeah. Well, Like to Die was published in June, and that was the 15th novel in the Rushmore McKenzie series. That's really a great run.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the premise of the newest novel?
Well, Like to Die is about identity.
Mm-hmm.
It's about who we pretend to be and what we become. This has always been an issue I've been interested in who we are, and who we are to different people.
Mm.
And you know, again, what you pretend to be. Kurt Vonnegut once said that you must be careful who you pretend to be, because that's the person you'll become.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated with identity in that regard. And so I wanted to write a book about that. To a lesser extent, it's also about the nature of friendship.
Okay.
I mean, how many friends do we really have? I mean, the people we know, are they really our friends or aren't they our friends? I mean, is this person your pal, your friend, your buddy? Mm-hmm. Or is this person just somebody you've known for 20 years?
Yeah, and in the age of Facebook and social media,
yes,
it's redefined.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I read somewhere that the average person has like 170-some Facebook friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many of those have you actually met?
Right.
See what I mean?
Right.
So it's you know, I try to explore those themes through the story.
Well, we're talking to David Housewright, the author of Like to Die. Well, one of the things I like best about your McKenzie series is McKenzie's self-talk, his conscience, which are always in italics throughout the novel. But McKenzie consistently ignores that inner voice, and it quite often leads him into trouble.
But...
Can you talk a little bit about this device and how you've used it to develop McKenzie's character?
Well, I use it because... it helps express the inner conflict.
Yeah.
You know, why am I doing this? I also use it more often than not as a device for humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's always talking to himself. And his inner voice is very self-deprecating. His inner voice will be happy to tell him, you know, you're really dumb as a brick. You know that, right? What you're doing is stupid, you know. Why did you say that? That was a dumb thing to say. I mean, he does this.
Yeah.
And I just used it originally partly for the humor and partly so that the reader will get a sense of what this guy's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And why he does the things he does and why he behaves the way he behaves. And the fact that he is aware of the pros and cons of his behavior. He is aware that if he does this, that means he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't do this, that means something else is going to happen, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just a way of expressing the character.
Sure. Well, it's very distinctive, and I would say it's also sort of a brand, because I was talking to somebody recently and I was saying, I'm reading this book, and you know, this author does this thing with this inner voice, and it's always in italics. And the person I was talking to knew exactly what book I was reading and who wrote it.
Okay.
So it was sort of fun for, we had that moment of, yeah, there we go. It's very distinctive. Well, you must have done some research with Like to Die, as I'm sure you do with your other books. In the acknowledgments of the book, you give a nod to Lisa Nicholson, the creator of Calavo Salsa Lisa. Did you actually tour her facility?
I did. She was very kind to me. I met her. One of the guys I play hockey with knew her.
Oh, okay.
And he introduced me to her, and she was very kind. She told me her story. She told me how she got to where she got, and I did tour the facilities, and she showed, you know, I had to wear the hat, you know, with the ear net and all that, and the shoes.
Yeah, those little.
The steps they take to make sure everything is, you know, not contaminated with germs or anything like that is really quite impressive. And, so she told me all of this. And, you know, I mentioned before, you know, I try to work things out ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And when I was working on this book and I decide what I want to write about, I always start with, what do I want to write about? I want to write about identity. I want to write about friendship. Mm-hmm. Now, what story can I tell? And I didn't really have a story. It was kind of driving me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I was experimenting with different scenarios, and none of them seemed to work. And then I met Lisa, and all the dominoes just fell right in order. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can see this. I can see this. I see the story now. Sure. And I don't want anybody to read the book and think that the character in the book that I refer to as Salsa Girl is Lisa. It most certainly is not.
Right.
But that's the way it works sometimes. You get an idea, and or you see something, or you hear something, and that triggers all the other elements that are bouncing around in your head to fall into place.
Sure.
And that's what happened with this particular novel.
We're talking to David Housewright, author of Like to Die. How do you go about creating your female characters, David? Is it hard to get inside their heads as a male writer?
No. I never thought so.
Kind of get in touch with your feminine side? Is that how it works?
Well, I was very fortunate, I think. In back when I was in college, back when I was deciding who I was going to be, I was lucky to have known these remarkable women who were very smart. You know, they were all driven. They were all going to be journalists. They're all going to be lawyers. They're all going to be what they became. Mm-hmm. And they were very smart, and they were independent, and they were, you know, they were funny, and they were all the things that you expect people to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stayed with me. So when I write female characters, it's not something I do deliberately. It's not like I say to myself, I'm going to write all my female characters are going to, I'm going to write about them with respect and compassion, and they're not going to be props or anything like this. I don't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms I want to write an honest character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm able to write honest female characters because I had known these women when I knew them. Mm-hmm. And not just them. There's my wife. There's my mother, my daughter, who's 26 now. I mean, you know, when I write the characters, I think of these people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just comes out, you know, that way. I wonder sometimes, I read books, and as you say, you get female characters who are treated as nothing more than props.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder, don't you know any women? they don't act this way. They don't. At least none of them that I know do.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's all in how you develop the characters, which kind of brings me to my next question, which is how, because you're writing two books a year and you're writing two distinctly different private investigators, Holland Taylor and Rushmore McKenzie. Is it difficult to differentiate your writing style when writing one or the other or developing their characters?
Well, when I revived Taylor after so many years, one of the things I did was I went back and I reread all the original novels to get the character back in my head.
Okay, yeah.
And also to reintroduce the character myself. I mean, who was this guy? Where did he come from? Well, you know, all those events that made him who he was, I had to remember. I didn't remember them.
Right.
So I had to go back and figure it out. Now, the other thing I did, and this is another reason why I'm writing two books, is I scrubbed all the McKenzie out of him.
Okay.
How'd you do that? Well, I had the original Taylor novels, and then I started doing McKenzie, and McKenzie was a very different character than Taylor. But there were things that they shared that eventually popped up. Taylor loved jazz. Well, mm-hmm. so did McKenzie. Taylor paid attention to baseball. Well, so did McKenzie. And I didn't mean that to happen. It's just after 15 books, all of that stuff kind of migrated in to the McKenzie novels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what I did was, after reading the book and reintroducing the character myself, is I scrubbed all that away mm-hmm. because I wanted Taylor to be a darker character than McKenzie. And mm-hmm. I wanted the stories to be darker. So that there are some stories I simply cannot tell in McKenzie's voice, which is a little more lighthearted, and the internal dialogue and things mm-hmm, like this. Mm-hmm. There's just some stories that doesn't really fit his character.
Yeah.
So I deliberately made Taylor a darker person, a less fun person, a less humorous person than he was originally. The books take place like 7 years in time. From the first three to the next two.
Okay.
And I have things happen in those years that make him a lot more morally ambiguous. It makes him much more focused on the job as opposed to his life. And McKenzie has a great, great life.
He's a millionaire, right?
Yeah, he's just got a wonderful life and friends and interests and whatever.
Yeah.
Taylor does not have a wonderful life. Taylor's job is his life.
Mm.
And, you know, it gives me a chance to tell some different kinds of stories, or at least tell stories in a different way, mm-hmm. in a different voice mm-hmm. than McKenzie's. And that's one of the reasons I decided to do this.
Well, I think it would be more fun, too. It would make, you know, every start of every new book something fresh again when you're alternating between the two.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. one of the things I have to worry about is making sure I'm speaking in the right voice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wrote a passage not too long ago. I'm working on another Taylor novel as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up, you know, I wrote it down. The next day I came back and I reread it and I just took it out of the book because it's like, no.
Oops, McKenzie snuck in there.
McKenzie would say that. McKenzie would do that.
Yeah.
Taylor wouldn't. And so I have to keep that in my mind when I switch back and forth is, okay, make sure it's the same voice. And that's a little more difficult, too. One of the reasons that it slows me down.
Some of I heard or read somewhere that your books were described both as crime noir and neo-noir. How would you describe them, and what crime novelists or mystery writers have influenced you?
I don't know what crime noir and neo-noir are. I don't know the difference. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I'm not trying to be, you know, mm-hmm. flip here. I think of them just as detective novels.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Private eye novels. I don't, you know, McKenzie is lighter.
Mm-hmm.
There's more humor in his books.
Mm-hmm.
As I just stated, Taylor is much darker. There's less humor in his books.
Sure. And so what? Who has influenced your writing, or is there a mystery or crime novelist that you admire and read yourself?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of guys. I mean, people I know, Kruger, of course, and mm-hmm. Brian Freeman, and a lot of local people, and Reed Coleman, Reed Farrell Coleman, and Dennis Lehane, and a few others. But I also was very much influenced in the day by John D. MacDonald and Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett. James mm-hmm. M. Cain was a favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm.
If I had it, but then I also read a lot of books that weren't crime novels, mm-hmm. like Kurt Vonnegut is a big fan of mine. Patrick O'Brien, I'm a big fan of mine. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
I'm sure, yeah. But if I had to pick one, I would say Elmore Leonard.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I find, you know, if you go back to the original books like I did,
mm-hmm.
and you read from there, you'll find that I'm more and more sliding into Leonard's minimalist philosophy.
Okay.
I'm not nearly as descriptive as I used to be. I don't describe the characters the way I used to. I try to get in a few lines that may anchor the character or the location in the reader's head. But I'll let the reader fill in the blanks, unless it's something specific they need to know to identify the character or to move the book along.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I leave it out. I don't tell people what a certain character looks like. I only tell them, like, he was big and tall. You could roller skate on him.
Well, and that says a lot.
Well, but my point is, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
In your head, you, the reader's head, you'll have an image. And whatever image you come up with will be as good, if not better, than anyone I would come up with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let it go. There's a book that will come out next June that takes place largely in Grand Marais.
Okay. Do we have a title for that one yet?
The working title right now is 9/10 of the Law. I don't know if that'll get past the editing process.
And is this a Taylor or a McKenzie novel?
This is a McKenzie novel.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it's going to be fun.
Well, I hope it is. But it centers around a woman who was the model for a series of paintings by this famous painter. And she's supposed to be gorgeous, and she's iconic and one of the most recognized people in Minnesota because of these paintings.
Okay.
As part of the conceit of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But at no time in this book do I ever describe her. At no time do I tell you what color her hair is or her eyes. If she's tall and thin or smaller or curvy or whatever. At mm-hmm. no time do I describe this woman. All I describe is the effect she has on people.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's a scene where he meets her, and then he comes home, and Nina says, "Did you meet her?" And he goes, "Yeah." She was very gracious. And Nina says, "Is she still gorgeous?" And Mackenzie says, "She doesn't look like she aged 3 days." But that's it.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, oh, you should see her blue eyes sparkle or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this on purpose. I do this because, you know, it really isn't necessary to know what she looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't I let the reader decide what this person looks like?
Yeah, that's good. It's kind of like when you watch a movie and they never look like you thought they would when you read the book. So.
Oh, no. And there have been cases where I'll read a character in a book and I'll be given a description of the character. Mm-hmm. And I will change it in my own head.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Where this one character, I just finished a book where he has a goatee and a couple of other characteristics. But as I'm reading the book, I ignore all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that character with the goatee and that in the story. Yes. I've come up with a different appearance for the character.
Well, it's been great talking with you and our listeners, and I will be looking forward to the the next McKenzie book coming out next June that is based in the Grand Marais area. So thanks
We'll have to come up and do something.
Yeah, sounds good. Come on up and we'll do a in-studio interview or something.
I would like that.
We'll get you in a book signing somewhere in town here. We have a couple of great bookstores.
Oh, sure. Drury Lane and a few others, sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being with us. This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene. Listen for us on the fourth Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. and on the following Saturday at 6 a.m. Join us next month when we speak with Mindy Mejia about her new novel, Leave No Trace.